Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate. I'm here with Dr. Gregory Eastwood and Dr. Robert Olick. Both are professors from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. We're discussing difficult decisions in healthcare, the ethics that surround the topic of medical errors. And Dr. Olick, just as we took the break, we introduced the idea of informed consent. Let's talk exactly about what that would mean.
Well, here, again, the law's perspective is that we want the doctor-patient relationship to be structured in terms of norms of reasonableness. So, for example, doctors might ask, well, how much do I need to tell patients? Not just about their medical condition, but about the risks and benefits of the treatment or procedure that I'm recommending, as well as reasonable alternatives. And it's important to remember that whether we're talking about ethics or law, doctors are not expected to give a real laundry list of potential risks, no matter how remote, to their patients. They are not expected to do that. There is a boundary of reasonableness in terms of what should be shared with patients, should be disclosed to patients. The other important point is to remember that it's not about the informed consent form as much as it's about the dialogue and the facilitation of understanding. So especially if you're having a surgical procedure, there will almost invariably be a consent form for that procedure, but we shouldn't think about the form itself as being the boundary of the information or the dialogue between doctor and patient. That further conversation needs to happen.
It's interesting you say that, because one of the things patients say to me is, well, you know, I signed an informed consent form and I don't remember signing it. And I'll say to them, you know, was it handed to you when you walked through the door and you were expected to sign it then? Or were you asked to sign it after you actually had a discussion with your doctor? And so that's actually something patients can kind of measure for themselves, is to hold on to a consent form until they feel as if they've had a conversation with their doctor. But I also asked the question, Dr. Eastwood, shouldn't patients also be looking for information on their own?
I think they should. I think most patients who have the interest and the ability should check online and or in books or ask their friends and relatives and so on.
Or other professionals.
Other professionals. And this gets into the notion of a second opinion. I think I made a statement before we began the program that I would be concerned about a physician or surgeon who resisted a patient seeking a second opinion. There might be some exceptions to that in an emergency situation, perhaps, but I think most of the time that's very much indicated. I want to get back to the risk issue. I think a characteristic of transparency is this openness between the physician and the patient. But sometimes when the patient is told, well, your risk has, of whatever it is, has increased from X to Y, I think we need to explore that a little bit.
Okay.
Let's say the risk just of living and acquiring a condition is 1%. And then because I do something, maybe I smoke or I overeat or something, my risk goes up to 2%.
Well, you've just doubled your risk.
So I've doubled my risk.
Yeah.
I've increased my risk by 100%.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible. But it's only gone from 1% to 2%. Let's take another example where my inherent risk is 25% and I increase it by 100%. It goes up to 50%. That is substantial.
Yes, it is.
So you have two situations where the risk is increased, doubled,
mm-hmm.
or 100% increase
mm-hmm.
in risk, but vastly different consequences. So I think patients need to be aware of this idea of risk, and it's very close to the idea of probability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the probability or the likelihood something is going to happen? We talked a couple of times ago about genes and predisposition. So if we have a gene for something that increases our risk or probability of something, that's not necessarily it will happen. And I think that people have to understand that a risk is just that. It's a chance.
It absolutely is. And when we sign those informed consent forms, when we decide that we are going to move forward, what we're doing is accepting the risk. But we also have to accept a few other things, some responsibilities. If the doctor says, stop taking aspirin for 24 hours before, or stop smoking, or don't eat after midnight, and we do, have we just increased our risk? And whose responsibility is that?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have increased our risk. Sometimes it's a little hard to tell, though,
mm-hmm.
if push comes to shove, whether the patient has, in fact, eaten after midnight. We sometimes can tell that, or smoked, or taken aspirin. So this really puts, I would say, an ethical responsibility on the patient.
On the patient,
well.
Exactly mm-hmm. right. This is not all mistakes, quote unquote, aren't all the responsibility of a physician. They right. aren't necessarily mistakes. All right, let's move on. If there is a mistake and there's a bad outcome, say it's a surgical mistake, or say the wrong drug has been prescribed for a patient, or whatever that might be, what is the doctor's role in letting the patient know about the mistake? Mm-hmm. Dr. Olick, you want to take a stab at that one, you being the lawyer?
Well, again, I'll try to answer the question both from the standpoint of ethics and from law. Mm-hmm. And in both arenas, although the law becomes a little more complicated on this point, the general rule would be that it's important to be honest with patients, to maintain that bond of trust, to feel confident as a professional that you can acknowledge your mistakes and do that both for your own professional development, but also for the patient's benefit, mm-hmm. because the mistake may need to be addressed in the patient's care and treatment. Now, there have been some studies done that suggest that doctors agree with that for the most part, but are more likely to disclose an error or mistake to a patient if harm was caused to the patient by the mistake. If it's a harmless error, then maybe less likely to disclose it. Mm-hmm. From the law's perspective, of course, the question arises, well, if you've told the patient that you made a mistake, will that increase your potential exposure to a lawsuit? As far as I know, that's certainly a reasonable question to ask, but I'm not aware of any studies that really answer that question for us.
Ah, but it also raises the questions. Disclosure is one thing, but apologies are something else. Mm-hmm. Dr. Eastwood, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's appropriate to apologize, and the apology can take different forms. One form of apology can just be very open and say, I'm sorry that this happened, and it was a mistake, it was an honest mistake, and so on. Of course, the word sorry means has different connotations in the English language.
That's true.
One meaning is, I'm sorry because I did something wrong. Another meaning is, I'm sorry for your situation. And most physicians are always sorry for
well, sure.
people's situation.
And I have to think, too, if a mistake is made and it really has harmed the patient, as difficult as it is for the patient and the patient's going to have to deal with it, I have got to think that for the best doctors, and that's most of them, there is an emotional toll and a psychological toll on them, too.
Yeah, I think that that's very real, and most physicians go into the profession for all the good reasons that we would hope they would, and they do have very much of a feeling about this. Obviously, they have to be a little careful about the exact language they use, because sometimes it can come back in litigation to work against them. But I think being open with patients and saying, this happened, I'm sorry it happened, or this happened and it was beyond anyone's control, is the best approach.
You know, a study came out from the Cleveland Clinic just a couple of years ago that they had trained their doctors to apologize in cases where there was harm to a patient. And they found that in the next 2 years, the number of lawsuits filed were one-third the amount of money that the suits were filed over. So there's even some benefit monetarily. And I hope there will be a shift, because I do know there were many years in there where the law said never admit, never talk to the patient, never apologize. And I do see that there has been a shift. Well, we've only got a little bit of time left. Let's talk about some of the ways mistakes can be minimized. You know, I'd like to start with saying to doctors, if I could speak to doctors directly, I would say, please manage our expectations. If we know there's a big risk, if we know there's a real chance this can't work, tell us ahead of time, and then we won't be so upset when it doesn't work well. Now, what would you say to patients? Dr. Olick, what would you say?
I think that's very good advice from the patient's point of view. Building on that, patients should be encouraged to ask questions.
Okay.
You know, we sometimes put it in terms of what would a reasonable patient want to know under the circumstances about the care and treatment that is being recommended for them. But we shouldn't stop there. Every patient is unique in a certain way, and everyone will have their own particular informational needs, mm-hmm. things they want to know about, mm-hmm. and patients should be encouraged to ask questions, and doctors should be encouraged to listen and make the time to answer those questions.
You know, in the perfect world, I would say that if the doctor can make his or her presentation about what they understand risks and benefits to be, the patient can take that information and go and research it and learn more, and then go back to the doctor and have one more conversation. It seems to me that that's just kind of the perfect structure. What do you think, Dr. Eastwood?
Well, I think it is. And, of course, it underscores the importance of being open and transparent. The other we can do some things that are process-oriented, too. We've talked about the electronic medical record and electronically writing orders.
Yes.
And making sure that the right side of the surgery is indicated.
Right. And patients shouldn't be afraid to mark it themselves, should
That's
they,
right.
if they can do that. Well, Dr. Robert Olick and Dr. Gregory Eastwood will look forward to next month's discussion of difficult decisions in healthcare. I so much appreciate the fact that you've been here this morning. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.
And this is Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.